Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 417 of the Roguecast, recorded May 23rd, 2023. F with the moles, you'll get put in the holes. Hello and welcome to the newly reorganized Rogues Gallery.
It's true.
We're coming here from your office, which is not reorganized.
No, in fact, the office is very messy right now.
Yes.
Because we've had to, as we have made the store look nicer, to create, you must first destroy.
It's true.
The office is destroyed. The rest of the store is looking nice, though.
Yes.
We got some new fixtures. We reorganized our already, honestly, pretty cool miniatures display. I'm not going to toot our own horn too much.
No, toot our horn. Toot.
All right. People have complimented us on us many times. Many times they've said that we have the best miniature selection in town. And I'm talking especially, of course, about the WizKids minis that we carry. We keep them as organized as we possibly can. And now we've gotten some new fixtures, moved some things around, prepping for new things, big restock coming on them. And they look pretty good so far. There's still a little bit of things to be worked out, but what do we got? We got three spinner racks.
We got three spinner racks that have minis on them.
Those are all the monsters
in one place.
Right. And the spinner racks are the player characters, and the monsters are now where the player characters were.
Right.
And they fold around onto the other side with the larger scale monsters.
But to make things more convenient, where we had broken up, just really for spacing reasons at the time, all the dragons had been together and all the giants, and we got them all together with the regular big miniatures. You're going to find them all in the same place. They look very beautiful with all their nice red packing.
All the big monster mash.
All the pre-painted monsters are together now. All the pre-painted minis are together.
Yep. And those cool, like, war bands that Wizards of the Coast has been doing for, a couple years now.
Yep.
We've got them all in one place. And they're, honestly, they've just gotten a little bit messy, and they look so nice all together. Again, not to toot our own horn.
Nick did a lot of reorganization work.
Nick did. Nick did great work.
I like to build things, therefore I built stuff. So did John.
Yeah.
I will also say, with this reorganization comes more dice.
Yeah, so Nick also logged in 172 new dice.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So we got new dice from me.
172 plus madness.
A company called Gatekeeper Games. They have a variety of cool dice in these little snap packages that you can open and close. Mm-hmm. They've got glow-in-the-dark. They've got glitter, multicolored.
They've got inclusion, which usually has something
in the middle of it.
So it's got like brickheads or the biome is actually really like one of my favorite ones. It's like oceany and kind of stuff.
You know, I haven't had a chance to look at these up close. I need to go and like kind of zero in on
them. There's a lot of cool dice.
Even the basic ones, which are sort of two-toned, three-toned, have a lot of like homages to like characters. So there's like Spider-Man themed ones. There's Superman.
Like
one.
Actual Spider-Man?
The colors. Special?
They're called Spider Dice.
Oh, right.
And a very recognizable logo, but they're not licensed.
No. I see. That's actually pretty clever. And the weird thing is, like, it's, I think, better than it would be.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like having a cool t-shirt that references something, but that doesn't have, like, the Spider-Man logo on it
like
or whatever.
It's the t-shirt you bought off of Etsy.
Yes.
Right.
but in better quality, because these are high-quality dice.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've got a ton of them. They're glow-in-the-darks are super cool. They're different.
They have color-changing ones.
They have color. They have heat. Yeah, the ones change with heat, body heat.
I feel like, you know, there's like cool dice here for everyone, but in particular, the dice goblins in your life, someone's birthday. These aren't necessarily all gift dice. In fact, I don't know that any of these were.
Right.
Although we also got some cool gift big dice, like those like fist-sized cool dice.
Yep.
We also got some dice trays and the dice towers, especially the resin light up ones.
Yeah, this is like them serious ass dice towers.
One's a Grim Reaper, one's a Red Dragon.
They got some heft to them.
And they have a color wheel LED that you can change the various color configurations.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I like the little quick fold up ones that we've got because those are like extremely portable and they're just kind of like look real quick setup. These, though, there is something to be said for, like, an epic dungeon, you know, a tower, dice tower to have. It's like, it kind of gives your game that feel of, that the old world feel you want, of ancient and creepy artifacts.
Yeah.
Well, we got new...
Because these look cursed.
We got new dice towers from, Forge?
Forged. The same as the classic one.
Yeah, and those are, like, heavy, like... heavy magnet, so they'll stay together.
And just in general, that area up by our dice with the new fixtures we're setting up are kind of becoming an area. We'll tweak this in the weeks to come, but that has more kind of cool little gifty type stuff. Like it also has spell cards. We moved our spell cards up there. I think they look much nicer than they did on the shelves back by our D&D section. It's just a better fit up there. And we'll have some cool, both DM and player, little tool kits and, mm-hmm. Some, little gift sets you can get like that.
Yeah, who makes the big binders that fit everything?
The gift set sort of ones, Randy? The slightly pricey ones?
Are those Paizo, the one that, the big companion?
Dragon Shield?
Oh, those are Dragon Shield.
Dragon Shield.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought those were, the spells.
No, those are Dragon Shield.
Okay. Those are things that would be, really good, I think, as a gift or anniversary gift for, the gamer, your gamer significant other or whatever. There's some cool stuff in there.
Yeah. Just a ton of cool stuff. And did we mention the magnet dice and all the cool, weird ones they did?
Nick mentioned the magnet ones, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, incidentally, up in that area, which subject to a little bit of moving lately, but while we've got some space up there, our staffer Serena set up a kind of a new staff pick zone, made some cool signs for it, and it's going to include both comics and games. I think right now it's going to be a little bit graphic novel heavy for our first rollout, but I know John has a game that he's recommended up there.
Yep.
And I trust John on game recommendations, and it was fun to find some stuff. I feel like our accumulated knowledge of decades worth of reading and all that stuff will hopefully point you to some good things. So check it out.
Yeah. We also have a big indie game restock.
Yep.
We got
all our indie RPGs.
Yep.
We restocked a bunch of favorites, but also we got some new ones. One called Town Called Malice,
mm-hmm.
that is Norse murder mystery, kind of like those, The Killing and all that kind of stuff. Discord has a ghost.
That sounded interesting.
I believe is going to be similar to The Host. That horror short, The Host.
Yeah. Wasn't that just called Host?
Was it called Host? Yes, it's called Host. The Host is a different thing. You're right. Heckin' Good Doggos Fetch Quests. So the adventure book for Heckin' Good Doggos. The Campfire Horror Anthology.
That looked fun.
Which has a bunch of... It's basically a horror anthology RPG with around, the campfire kind
it's
of
like
thing.
Did we also... Playing Trick or Treat.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I want to take a look at that.
Yeah, that
did
cool.
We also get restocks on, some of, say, the solo RPG games?
We did. Unfortunately, we did not get Broken Cask in.
Uh-huh.
And Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, I think, was either out or we weren't out of it when we ordered.
We weren't out when we ordered.
But we do have a handful of those back in. Whispers in the Walls is back in. We've got that one that's a dual RPG, Badger and Coyote.
Oh, yeah.
So we got some of those back in. We got those. We got a Kickstarter game, Thunder Road Vendetta. This is a Restoration Games, the guys who do Unmatched, Return to Dark Tower.
Yeah.
This is a 1985 game about sort of Car Wars style. It's it's a race between armed cars. You have three cars, a light, a medium, and a heavy. And then you put down these roads with hazards. And you kind of knock people into the things and try to be the last person.
You're saying it's like a 1980s Twisted Metal board game?
Something like that, yeah, because it's got you've got a shoot action.
Yeah.
Each person has a helicopter on their team that they can use to shoot things.
If it's in the 1980s, it's not Twisted Metal. If it's in the 1980s, it's Car Wars.
I watched a playthrough video of it yesterday, and it looks like a ton of fun. Restoration makes really nice games. Their components are really good. It comes with fully plastic cars. This looks like a great game.
I know our younger listeners may not know about Car Wars, but it was a big breakout game. It's put Steve Jackson Games, who now make Munchkin as kind of their big thing, and they make the RPG called GURPS.
Yep.
But that was the thing that sort of put them on the map, that and Illuminati, I think, in the 80s. But could have even been late 70s.
Yep.
You would outfit and wage a little miniatures war with cars, and I feel like there's been a Car Wars shaped hole in us as every once in a while they do a little like a Car Wars is back kind of thing, but it kind of I think right now we're between versions of it.
Yeah, I think that's
and
right.
So something like this would be a welcome addition.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't want to get in a car and Mad Max fight people?
Not me. I definitely do. We got, speaking of Unmatched, we got the Unmatched Marvel for King and Country, which is Black Widow, Black Panther, Winter Soldier.
Yep.
This
yep.
is the one that comes with the minis, and it's like a two-person fighty game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you can take any two characters from that they've made that are like both legendary heroes, Marvel characters, real people like Bruce Lee, movie characters like from Jurassic Park, and pit them against each other on the map. And you can do like I think you could use any of the maps for any of them, right?
Right.
And the maps are fun. You know, you could be in Wonderland from, you know, Alice in Wonderland. You could be on, like, the deck of a pirate ship. You could be on a castle from Robin Hood.
I would like to fight King Arthur versus a T-Rex.
King Arthur versus a T-Rex in Wonderland.
Yes.
It's on.
Yes, that sounds like a good idea. The cool thing about this, I played this recently, I'd forgotten this, that the cards are your life.
Oh, right. If you can no longer draw cards...
You have to spend a card every turn. If you can't draw a card, you start taking exhaustion.
Right. It's basically, if you run out of cards, you get like a turn or two left or something, as
yep.
I recall.
Yep, that's correct.
Which I think, Randy, when you and I played this a few... it might have been a year or two back, but...
It was always back, yeah.
Yeah. At one point it came to that.
Yep.
Like, we were down to like those last few cards, or at least one of us were, and I remember it was like, okay, it's all or nothing. And it's kind of exciting. It does make for those make or break moments.
Yeah. I bought the Cobblin Fog set, but I've not yet played it.
Nick, me, and Randy, and John have been playing a little bit more often lately. I think we're going to play. We can do another round of Champions, or we're going to bring Randy in on that.
We'll play Marvel Champions,
and so it is time. Let's try and do that sometime soon.
Yeah, for sure. And then we got Damage Control, which is a new WizKids game.
Yep.
We got a bunch of Marvel.
Based on the Marvel license. Yeah.
So it's like you're the ones cleaning up after superhero battles, which is pretty cool.
Honestly, it makes a lot of sense for a game when you think about how, like, I assume it's got to have some element, like a sort of Sims, Civ kind of game or whatever, you know, worker placement or something, as you try and rein in the chaos of Iron Man and his Hulkbuster armor probably wrecking shit.
Right. And then the other one we got is Marvel Legendary Midnight Suns, which is the... Magic themed, just like the video game they're doing. This is their
Marvel Legendary is their deck building game,
yes.
Right?
Correct. Yep, yeah.
It's officially themed around the Midnight Suns one.
Yep,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and then just worth mentioning that Free RPG Day is coming up June 24th, so we're about a month out.
Yeah, about that.
And then I started making our list for our board game day in July. I'm working with John. We're going to make a list of games we're going to demo. Got a list of about a dozen games. We'll narrow it down. So we'll probably put up some sign-ups for that in the store pretty soon. All right. Let's talk about comics for the week of May 24th.
Yes.
And let's start with City Boy, the third and final of the We Are Legends launch, which is sort of a AAPI month. They're all...
Right, Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Yeah. I have to say, all three of these have been kind of hits for me.
Do we all have different favorites?
We might. We'll go through it in just a second, because I think we may. But yeah, I have to say, like, I didn't have particular expectations of any of these. We had made fun of the name City Boy, which does sound doofy.
It's not
but
great.
In context, I actually think it works, and I'll tell you why when we get to it. Real quick, let's just go around the table. Of the three that came out, what are they? There's City Boy, there's Spirit World, and what's the
Vigil.
Espionage one?
Vigil.
All right, Randy, your favorite.
My favorite, I think, is the Vigil.
Nick, favorite?
The same, Vigil.
You losers. for me, I think City Boy might land on top, but Spirit World would be the next favorite of them.
Interesting.
So let's quick talk about City Boy, which is the final one. Just as a real quick first thing, it's written by Greg Pak, who his pedigree, his biggest stuff,
creator of Amadeus Cho,
but through the process of writing Planet Hulk and World War Hulk, two of the biggest Hulk stories of all time, and that have stood the test of time. Those came out 10 or 15 years ago, and it heavily were a big part of all the Hulk stuff in Thor Ragnarok, so that was drawn right from his stuff.
Yep.
And World War Hulk was like one of the coolest, most brutal beatdown comics of all time.
Yep.
I thought it was. I still think it's good. Anyway, so he also did Mech Cadet U, which is what becoming a Netflix show.
Yes, soon. Yep.
Yeah, so he's doing all right. This one had an interesting premise. Randy, you might have to like prompt me a little bit throughout it, but it's set in Metropolis. Or, well, let's see, that's...
Is it Metropolis?
You know what? He grew up in Metropolis because the very first page says it.
Yeah, you're right. But I guess it is in Metropolis. I was thinking it was a foreign city because it's like Chinatown in Metropolis, huh? Isn't it?
Yes. Although,
or maybe Koreatown?
It may be
like a Chinese restaurant.
At some point, he feigns that he doesn't know Korean because there's like this kind of.
You know what? It's definitely Metropolis.
Okay. Because there's like this crime boss who's like a local small time crime boss, like a little mobster who wants a little piece of everything in the neighborhood. And he has grown up. Let's see. Did he grow up? Was he like an orphan?
No, his mother gave him to his. Grandparents.
His mother like seems like sad, and she's like living in with his grandpa.
Okay, yes. Okay. And he ends up coming across this weird experiment, which they intercut scenes of this throughout it, which ends up with, I'm not going to say all the details, but he ends up with a weird, like almost mystic connection to cities. Like cities as an entity, the vibe of them, the people, what's good and bad about them.
It reminds me of the character on The Authority. What was his...
Hawksmoore. And I think I thought they were going to
connect
them. It was tied into Hawksmoore, although there's not anything confirmed in the first issue of this.
I actually like that it wasn't, to be honest.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things he can do just immediately that you see is he's just walking around, and it's almost like he can look below the surface, and like it's almost as if he sees... You know in Batman, the Arkham games, when you go into that detective mode and you see like the skeletal view of stuff? He sees that. He can go do that with like buildings and stuff and sort of see... Sometimes little small things of value to him, like, oh, here's something that I can sell at a pawn shop, an old camera that's buried in the ground. I can sell this and make $40 or something like that. And so he's kind of like living on the streets a little bit that way, and it's sort of what puts him on the radar of like this local crime boss. But it's clear that his powers will ultimately prove to be like a higher level than that. That is how he's surviving. He seems to want to stay off the grid. He's not, like, a guy who's, like, real ambitious.
Based on the big end teaser, it's definitely a little bit bigger.
It's tying into something that I think is actually a very cool thing to tie into DC. It ties it into Metropolis, and it ties it into Metropolis' history.
Those last few pages got me, because I was enjoying this. I enjoyed this, but it was my least favorite of the three.
Mm-hmm.
But that finale, I'm like, oh, this is bigger than I thought it was.
Yeah, I was wondering about, like, some of the bruisers that we'd seen in there, like, these kind of high-tech security guards. Yeah. I was like... They look kind of familiar. I'm like, what is that armor they're wearing? And then that gets to it near the end. I actually think he has kind of a cool look.
I do. I like the look, too.
I don't know quite what I'd describe it as, other than he's wearing...
It's sort of urban camouflage kind of thing.
He's got a ball cap. He's got a hoodie. Like kind of thing. He's got... like cool sneakers. It's not like a superhero costume though, but yeah, he does have a mask on, like a like we all did in the pandemic. But like, I know that was always something that was like a bigger thing in Japan.
Yes.
But in Asian countries in general, it's a more common thing. I think just as a health thing. I don't know if it's a pollutant thing. I forget why, but it's also it's that sort of societal, like, society comes first a little bit over the individual sometimes. And so you're kind of looking out for... It's just much more common, like, oh, I'm sick, or somebody might be sick, I'm going to wear a mask. They don't say why he's wearing it, but they just casually have him with it. They even have it, like, pulled down a lot of the time where it's just resting on his chin. But it's just interesting, too. Like, it captures a vibe you don't see too often. And the same thing with the Koreatown stuff that you have in here. And the sort of small mob thing, which, we, like you said, is going to become bigger. But, yeah, I really liked it. I thought something I guess I want to see in characters is I want their power. If they have some kind of weird powers, I want them to be cool. He has cool powers.
Yep.
And based on something else I've heard, he doesn't happen in this one, that he can create, like, avatars of cities that embody as, like, animals of some sort.
Hmm.
I wanted to say that they said that, like, this was, like, something I saw in an interview or that they used in an early PR thing, so it's not, like, some big spoiler. But they said something like Gotham embodies as, like, a rat or something like that. And I don't know if it's, like, this big mystical rat or if it talks. I have no idea if it serves him, fights alongside him. But I did get the impression it might fight alongside him. And I was like, that's a cool idea.
That is a really cool idea.
I feel like, you know, if you were to... I don't know what they would choose, but, like, Metropolis feels like it would have, like, an eagle or something like that. A little bit more heroic and uplifting in spirit, flying... But I guess a bat would make more sense for Gotham. Maybe that's what they meant. That's what it is. I guess a rat is just a, you know, what is it? Joker says it's a flying rat.
Yep.
anyway, But yeah, it's another win for him. I have to say this is one of the stronger little mini. It's not a initiative. I guess I'd call it an initiative.
Yeah, yeah,
initiatives that they've had at DC.
We have a couple sort of flashbacky stuff at Marvel this week.
Yep.
Fury number one. This is a one shot. It is a oversized
60th anniversary, I think, of Nick Fury.
Al Ewing writes, several different artists: Scott Eaton, Tom Riley, Adam Kubert, Ramon Rosanas, and it's focused on both Nick Fury as the head of the Howling. It jumps around in time, so it's like Nick Fury Howling Commandos, Nick Fury during the Space Age, early Shield era, Nick Fury after the original Sin stuff. And then starts off with Nick Fury Jr.,
aka current Nick Fury, aka guy who looks like Sam Jackson.
Yep,
Who is Nick Fury's son?
And this is—he's riffing on a lot of things. He's riffing on Steranko. He's riffing on Mark Millar's introduction of that Nick Fury. He's riffing on
talking about from Ultimate X-Men or way
yes,
back when.
Yeah, that was how he's introduced to the Marvel Universe. Yeah, or the Ultimate Universe. He's riffing on Stan Lee's, you know, Howling Commandos. A lot of sort of like.
Randy, do these stories tie together,
They're
focusing on
a new villain.
It's a callback to a classic, but in a new way.
Yeah. Basically, if you've ever wondered about Nick Fury, you'll get everything in this one shot.
It's true.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of cool spy action and war action.
Let me quick ask this. This is the important thing I need to know. Yep. Does he, in the Howling Commandos days, go Wahoo?
You know,
if he doesn't like leap over a trench or like some barbed wire and scream Wahoo while machine gunning Nazis, I thought it was anybody in the team could do it.
Oh, okay,
in fact, the very first page, jumping out of a plane.
That's what I'm talking about. It's Nick Fury's thing.
Yeah, Dave. I believe Al Ewing is definitely he knows this Nick Fury. I could tell from reading this because I've read bits and pieces over the years.
And he did the Wasp thing recently that kind of is meant to, like, you know, call back into a lot of her history.
And the Ant-Man one of the same variety.
The Ant-Man one.
And he did that one shot about the weird mask, you know. Al Ewing is a guy who likes the deep dive into the Marvel Universe. He does the same thing like Kurt Busiek does, Geoff Johns, those guys. So it's a lot of fun. If you like that sort of a little bit of a nostalgia trip along with some just solid action, really nice art, worth a look. Especially if you like the character Nick Fury. If you don't like the character Nick Fury, it might not be for you. Similarly, Storm number one. This is they've been doing a series of these like sort of nostalgia miniseries. They flash back to a certain time and place when the character had a very distinctive look or style.
Recently, it's been like, for instance, this is Marvel stuff. Joe Fixit.
Yep.
Venom.
Maestro.
Venom in his black symbiote suit Spider-Man. Not just Venom, but also
Venom Lethal Protector.
Also Venom Lethal Protector. A lot of these are basically the characters from the 80s and 90s.
Warlock Rebirth, is that one too?
It absolutely is.
So like they're going back to some stuff that was in the 80s and 90s, very popular.
And generally bringing in creators who were kind of, you know, worked heavily on the run at the time.
Right. So this is Anne Nesenti, who was a writer and editor around this time, doing a story of punk Mohawk Storm, which is the best Storm.
It is.
It's true. But that was like a divisive time for fans. You know, I was reading right in that era, and you would see on the letters page, people are like, "You ruined Storm."
Yep.
It was interesting to see. And at the time, I remember I'm like, I didn't know what to make of it. So one of the things I like in this is, Anne Nesenti's writing is somewhat of the era. Every once in a while, there's a cringe moment or two. But there was like one of the things that she mentions is like, Wolverine is talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kitty reacted badly, famously, against the punk rock look. And she's like, Storm, what have you done with your beautiful hair? You're a goddess. What would you do? And she's like, this is who I am now, Kitty, or whatever. She's like, you'll have to get used to it because this is who I am. Wolverine's like, hey, she's like a scared little kid. She's getting used to it. And he's like, this isn't your normal thing. He's like, hey, he actually says, he's like, you ever been to like a punk rock show? He's like, he actually kind of calls out her a little bit. Not quite gatekeepy, but he's just like, it's just not your usual thing. And he's like, so yeah, you might expect a teenage kid who bonded with you to be a little freaked out. He's like, so maybe take it easy on her a bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought, good point, Wolverine. Anyway, if the 80s X-Men were your era, this will have some stuff in it. And a little bit of the writing is kind of dated too, but it's also like kind of dated in the way that the 80s era stuff is if you reread it. So I think it's worth a look.
Then we've got Daredevil and Echo, which is by Taboo and B. Earl. I don't know They're people.
Taboo is an unusual name.
Yep.
For a writer.
Taboo is not. I think Taboo did the new like Werewolf by Night for a little while back.
Okay.
And this is art by Phil Noto. So it's got that cool painty. Part of it takes place in 1835 with a Murdoch ancestor who seems to be. Oh. They're doing a.
It's Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York, exactly.
Literally just the other day was watching this video on the real history of the Five Points area in New York where Gangs of New York is set, and they totally call it out. It's got the Bowery Boys gang and the kind of racial strife and stuff of the era.
You're also tying like an ancestor of Echoes into
I was wondering because I only saw the beginning of this, but I didn't see how it connected to the story.
And then Daredevil and Echo are teaming up to deal with a modern day supervillain that seems to be. Yeah, some ties to stuff that happened in 1835.
But this might be, like, somebody who might want to see a little bit more of Echo before the show starts.
Right.
Which is in...
later this year.
Later
November.
Oh, was it? I thought it was sooner than that.
I think it's, like, November.
Okay.
I know they're going to drop every episode of it, so...
And every episode of Loki, right?
Yep.
No. I don't like that.
No, Loki, I think, is not going to be dropped for one.
I just... I had heard
I think we misread, yeah. Then we've got Supermassive, the 2023 edition. This is the occasional one-shots they do where they cross over the Supermassive universe, which is Radiant Black, Rogue Sun,
Radiant Pink, Radiant Red.
Usually like teasing a big story that's gonna
Dead Lucky
cross over into some of the other books.
So this is a big story.
Is it like sort of a company wide or like a annual for the
kind of
for the setting for the massive?
So it has the Radiant characters together with I believe someone from Dead Lucky, along with Rogue Sun, and it gives you a status quo of all of them, and there's something to do with the Holy Grail.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's... I'm behind on my massive verse, to be honest. But reading this reminded me, I need to catch up. It's all really fun stuff. Green Arrow number 2 hits this week. We talked about Green Arrow number 1, and I think we all enjoyed it. And I think we all enjoyed issue 2.
I actually liked issue 2 better, I think. Because I think it zeroed in instead of being kind of like that, getting to know the vibe of it, which was Green Arrow is off planet. He's on stranded on some alien world somewhere. It is not like some crazy alien desert world, but like a futuristic-y looking city world, with like crime lords and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Including a feline type crime boss, which they do a little bit of joke because he was always like I take down the fat cats.
Yep.
This guy's like a little fat
cat.
That was a good joke.
A Jabba the Hutt type thing. And meanwhile, it seems like Arsenal and Black Canary are getting ready to go and try and are they pulling a rescue mission?
Well, they're trying to figure out what happened to Mia, which is his daughter.
His daughter, yeah.
And Connor, who both disappeared right in front of them.
Yep.
And they feel like it's tied into Amanda Waller. And they're going after Waller.
Right. Who is the person who is with Green Arrow?
That's Mia.
Okay, that's Mia. That's right.
Because something is, like, transporting Green Arrow's family into random places. It even seems like through time in a little bit, too. Which is weird.
I thought that there was actually some pretty good chase and action sequences here. It honestly made me think of, like, if Green Arrow was running around chasing and fighting people on Coruscant.
I can sort of see that.
Well, the good thing about Williamson gets Ollie's voice.
Yeah, this sounds like Ollie, and in fact, I think he does this... He opens by having Ollie describe Roy Harper.
Yeah.
And I think he nails down Roy Harper. I think he is trying to define the Arrow family and the way the Bat family has been very... Like, anyone knows what the Bat family is and sounds like. And he's trying to do the same thing for the Green Arrow family. The thing I'm not so sure about is that there's some weird cosmic... Ollie's like, we can't be together. And I'm like, okay, I hope you guys resolve that. Because I don't want there to be a cosmic reason you can't all be together.
I think it's
going
to be resolved pretty quickly.
That's my only gripe about it is I don't want them to all be apart forever. I want them to be together pretty soon. Because I like the way they're all working together.
I kind of agree. But I did like seeing Arsenal and Canary working together and their hunt for Amanda Waller and who they end up running into.
Which leads to some fun places.
Right. There's actually two people they run into. One person is a villain and one person is, I guess I'd say, maybe an anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
Both promise to have some interesting times.
Yep. Also worth noting, we got the latest issue of Nightwing, which, as always, Tom Taylor Tuesday is a reason to celebrate.
Yep.
And I think, Dave, you and I keep talking this up. I don't know how many people are reading it, but the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Usagi Yojimbo story. It's issue 3.
I think we've mentioned before this, Randy, but it's kind of wild. Although that series, you know, the characters kind of do progress slowly over time.
It's been going
for decades, but occasionally there have been children and marriages, and characters have aged by, oh, maybe, let's say 10 years over the span of the series. Yeah. But, like, some of the big, massive, like, turbulent, like, oh, will they overthrow the Shogun? That kind of stuff hasn't really ever been fully resolved.
Right. He's resolving it in this miniseries.
In a weird way, and it's good too.
It is. It's really good.
There's, in fact, someone will die in this, and it's a notable character. There's also a badass battle with his ninja. You know, everybody's an animal in this, of course.
Yep.
There's ninja moles in it, and they're cool, and they're just like popping up everywhere, and there's just huge fights with them, and like intrigues going on in the background, double crosses among the enemies. You know, good sort of like get a little bit of that. What would I call it? Feudal Japan, Game of Thrones stuff going on in the background.
Do the ninja moles have, like, razors for hands?
I asked this Marin and I were talking about this, and I looked up moles, and those are, like, just regular mole claws.
That's what those moles have. They just have claws.
Yeah, you know how, like, they have little pink, fleshy hands, but they terminate in, like, talons.
Oh, wow.
After the moles, we get put in the holes.
What is happening?
And it makes a good point. For ninjas, that's pretty cool.
The last search on my phone, Nick, was mole claw. He made them look particularly sharp.
I don't think they're that.
But they're pretty intense.
They are, but they're very cute.
These are ninja moles. Regular moles
probably sharpen them.
Yeah, they probably sharpen their claws.
Yep.
Regular moles just have, you know, they just have claw claws. They don't sharpen their claws.
Yeah, but regular moles just need to cut through dirt. Ninja moles need to cut through people.
Cut through people. Or animal people. Anyway, really, really good issue. Really enjoying it.
Randy, you know, in this Nightwing issue that has the conclusion of their supernatural story, you know what my favorite scene in there was actually something that Raven does at the very end.
Yes.
I was like, that was something I felt like I've needed to see for a while.
Yep.
It was cool for Raven. I felt it was a deserved thing for the other character.
Yep.
Yep.
So, good stuff.
Yeah, agreed. I guess I want to mention Hallows Eve number 3 comes out. I'm actually really enjoying this. You know, so every now and then, Marvel would put a new character out, and I'm like, oh, this one might stick. I don't know if this one will stick, but Hallows Eve is a cool character. She's got kind of a... she's not quite a villain, but she's definitely not a hero.
Yeah, I think it'd be safe to call her an anti-hero.
It's a fun ability to have.
She's got cool powers.
Mystical masks that give her different abilities, depending on which one she's wearing.
The art is good. This says a running of a Spider-Man.
Right, she's basically Spider-Man universe adjacent, so she's probably going to often have a foot in Spidey stuff.
And I like the writer, Erica Schultz, a new person to me, but I'm liking her writing. And then I just want to mention...
I wonder where she's going to land, Randy. Do you have any sense of that? Like, is she going to be like...
No idea.
A freelance agent. Is she going to be a hero?
Your guess is as good
thief.
As mine.
Is she going to work with Black Cat?
I don't know.
Answer the question, Randy.
I don't know.
Extrapolate.
We'll use her later.
then we've got Star Trek The Mirror War and Star Trek Warriors of the Mirror War, which are the Mirror War miniseries.
These are trade paperbacks, right?
Yes, these are trade paperbacks. The Mirror War is the Next Generation, the conclusion of the big, like, story they've been telling about the Star Trek Next Generation Mirror Universe.
Right, which, you know, famously, although they did Mirror Universe in original Star Trek.
And Deep Space Nine.
And later on Enterprise, and later on Discovery, they had never done it with Picard's era.
Yeah.
So this era did that, they've done multiple miniseries, and this is like the culmination miniseries.
Yep. And the Warriors of the Mirror War is some one-shots that focus on, like, Geordi and Data and sort of what they're like in this mirror universe.
You ever wanted to see, like, a little sort of maniac Wesley Crusher?
Yep.
Or, like, Data, like, all swollen, kind of with Borg tech and,
he's
like...
He's a straight-up...
got guns on his arms. Yeah. Like, it is fun to see the next-gen crew be bad. Or Picard wearing, like... a uniform that's like sleeveless because he's got big old muscle arms.
Shows guns.
Gotta show them guns.
Not phasers, but his guns.
That's right.
Anyway, I was glad to see that come out in trade. I've been really enjoying it. Anything else? Did I miss anything?
For me, Superman Action Comics, which this issue, if you were a fan of The Return of Superman, you will definitely see some notable guest stars in this one.
I mean,
one.
Right on the cover I see Cyborg Superman.
Yeah, but there's
And it's a cool cover,
but
too.
But there are a few others in here that I was... I kind of had a lot of fun with. I feel like just there's some cool ideas in there. And then Jeff Johns has Justice Society of America number 4, which is the penultimate issue of his first story arc.
Yep.
There's some cool... He's doing cool stuff with Madame Xanadu, which I always appreciate. And
Johns sometimes, even sometimes if I'm not fully on board a story, there'll be like little arcs within it.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I really am not a big fan of his big bad for Degaton, but I'm liking a lot of sort of the multiversal kind of time jumping. I like Hunter.
I think we would all agree Mikkel Janin's artwork is through the roof. Through the roof, good. I'm just looking at this first page, and it shows like the doorstep of Madame Xanadu's, like her sanctum sanctorum. Not as fancy as Doctor Strange's, but man, is that a beautiful picture of it. With like rain coming down on like, it's like a brownstone or something like that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think
that's all for me.
I'm going to mention a few oddball ones.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of liking the sort of cheesy but fun Warlock Rebirth. For those of you who watched the Last Guardians movie, and I think everybody I know who's seen it really has liked it.
Yep.
But if anybody, if there's one complaint that longtime Marvel fans have, it's that Adam Warlock was not the kind of badass Adam Warlock that he was in the 90s and 80s. And the Warlock Rebirth is another one of those callback projects like the Storm one. With Ron Mars and Ron Lim, two sort of guys known for their time with on Silver Surfer and stuff, doing a pretty fun story that has the it's basically the Infinity Watch characters, so Adam Warlock, Pip the Troll, Gamora, etc. You know, this is kind of somewhat meat and potatoes cosmic stuff for them, but it's fun. It's like if you plug into the vibe, you know, check it out. All Eight Eyes, that is Dark Horse's book, new comic. It's hard to describe this one other than... it's a little if you've ever seen the movie Arachnophobia. And this is the second issue. We already did talk about the basics. But it's kind of fun. A guy who... What was it? He's like a recovering addict, Randy.
Yeah.
I guess I'd say. And he's... he gets... A homeless guy kind of reveals to him... He's like... That there's basically like in... Is it New York?
I think it is New York.
It is New York. There is like a secret war kind of going on with him and the knowledge that there are like these secret enclaves of spiders, giant spiders, ranging from mostly like the size of like cats and dogs, still creepy, very creepy, you know, bigger than facehuggers, to as large as a car that move around, kill homeless people, get looked away from or covered over by cops and stuff like that. Really amazing art in this. I don't know why the art is so good on it. It makes me think it would have been like a really good fit for Walking Dead or, you know, Ed Brubaker's crime comic, something like that. But it shows the point. It is both kind of a thematically a story, I think, about like recognizing that there's people we overlook in cities and it's homeless populations, as well as a creepy urban legend hunt spiders kind of story.
I thought it was going to be more metaphorical, but as we get into the second issue,
it's
I'm
pretty
like,
literal.
Oh, it's there are giant spiders everywhere. Okay,
yep.
Got it.
Yep. as the police captain says when they put a bag on his desk and open it up and a big old dog sized dead spider rolls out, Jesus shit, Dominguez. all Eight Eyes, I'm still making up my mind on it overall, but it has for sure qualities to recommend, and the art is foremost among them. But I also think it's a neat premise, and the spiders just look cool and creepy. I think that's it. Those are all the ones I wanted to mention.
Okay. So let's take a break, and then let's talk about some news for the week. Alright, we don't have a ton of news this week. We have a couple trailers to talk about and a couple comic-related news, of all things. We don't always talk about comic-related news.
Sure.
But let's start with the trailer for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Right.
So this is some big... So, I don't... Maybe I'm crazy here, right? Do you guys think that there's a correlation between, like, Mission Impossible movies and the Fast and Furious movies? Like, those are competing... and also cooperative, like, like big movie franchise series, right? Like,
yeah.
If you crossed over Mission Impossible and Fast and Furious, it would totally work, right?
I think you could
probably
make it
so.
They're not gonna, but they could.
Yeah, honestly, now that you say that, I kind of like the idea. Ethan Hunt's team gets, say, captured.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to kill him off.
No.
Let's get him captured because you got to restore the family at the end.
Yeah.
And he's got to call in some rogue agents.
Yes.
He heard about the job they pulled off in Dubai or whatever.
Yeah, he knows Mr. Nobody.
So Ethan will be saying, like, oh, I was running around on that building. It's a good thing you did your job a week later because you guys drove right through that window.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, you could connect him up with something like that. And so he's aware of them, and they bring them in, and he joins the family.
I'm just saying, they feel like they would fit right together.
Yeah, and you know what? They can find out whoever the big bad guy is, and they can make him family, too.
And they're both doing, like, multiple, and this is their big ending. And they're both doing a part one, part two thing.
Yep. And I'll be honest, they're both a little bloated.
They're both fronted by egomaniacs.
Yes.
There's a lot of crossover.
And I think they're both pretty good at what they do.
Yes.
I'm also sometimes tired of both of them.
Yes.
And I say this as a fan. So what I will say about this one is that I'm right now, and we'll see where I am as it gets closer, I'm not really into it. I felt like this for, like, the last few Mission Impossibles. Where are you guys at?
I thought the trailer was only okay, but I know that I've enjoyed every Mission Impossible movie I've seen, so I'm super looking forward to it.
They're bringing back, what's his name? Kittredge, right?
Yep, Kittredge is brought back.
He's shown up occasionally.
Oh, has he?
Has he? When was he in before? I thought he hasn't been in since the first one. I don't think he's been in since the first one.
But it is, like, if nothing else, was he an ally in the first one?
He was an ally, but he also was an enemy because Ethan was on the run, as often happens.
So he had to be the one pursuing him.
Yes.
He had to be the hard ass.
Yes.
He's got a very memorable voice, and he's good at playing Weasley.
Yes, he is. He's the one who tries to bring him in early on, and then Ethan blows up a fish tank or something.
Yep, he does the bubblegum thing.
Yeah, no, he's back. This is the first time.
Yeah, it's the first time he's back.
So, Nick, are you looking forward to it?
Day one,
all right.
Yeah, no, this looks great.
Stayed on your list?
I've really enjoyed what Christopher McQuarrie has done with the Mission Impossible movies. I know that people say they can be bloated or a little bit, but there's so much fun involved in these kind of insane. I mean, Tom Cruise is just doing insane things.
Well, when we were watching it, there's a bit where he's walking, he rides a bike up to the edge of a cliff. It looks like he literally skid to a stop right, you know, like within inches of it, and there's a good chance that Tom Cruise literally did that. We know he's a madman.
Yep, he loves heights.
And then there's a thing where he looks like, I don't know where it is, but it almost could be like Ireland or something like that. It was a very green sort of cliff hill with a big rise right before it drops off. And he, like, takes that bike up there at, like, full speed and dives off. And I assume he's got, like, a parachute or something like that. Because he's fallen into a big-ass canyon.
Well, it's either a parachute or a glide suit.
Yeah, and something like that. But I was like, probably a real stunt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny to be able to say that now, and it's pretty impressive, though.
But, I mean, like the Fast and Furious franchise, they've built up a group of characters that I like.
The Fast and Furious, despite having 20 characters, they keep adding more. Hayley Atwell's in this one, right?
Yes, Hayley Atwell is in it. Rebecca Ferguson is in it.
Well, she's been in it before.
Yeah.
But I thought, I didn't spell, like, Tatiana Maslany. She's not in this, is she?
No.
Okay, she's somebody who looked like her.
They're definitely using a lot of people that they've used in the previous movies, too.
And
is this meant to be their kind of, like, is this a rap sort of thing?
Yes, Dead Reckoning is supposed to be part one, two is supposed to end it. But that was also supposed to be Ghost Protocol 4 was supposed to be him handing over to Jeremy Renner, and that didn't happen.
Nope.
So I don't believe Tom Cruise is going to leave this movie series alive.
No. Well, I mean, I honestly don't know if he'll leave it. I mean,
That's what I mean. I mean, he will die, and that's when it will end. Although, by that point, they might be able to do AI Tom Cruise. We'll have Mission Impossible forever.
Please no. what happened to Renner's character? I forget.
He just kind of, he became a bat. In the fifth one, he was working with Alec Baldwin, right? As, like, one of the behind-the-scenes guys.
An aide.
And then he just kind of vanished. Because Renner's like, hey, I thought I was going to be the lead. And they're like, no, sorry. And he's like, well, I'm going to go flip houses and fall under snowmobiles.
It's a choice. He made a choice. It was like Mission Impossible on one hand, snowmobile on the other.
Also, Hawkeye, you know, he didn't have a whole.
That is true.
Disney
there was a whole series on there.
But mostly, he also is a Disney Plus series flipping houses.
It's called renovations. It's not about flipping houses. It's about flipping. He collects vehicles.
Oh, I thought it was about houses.
No, he collects vehicles and retrofits them to certain people's needs.
Was that what he was trying to do when the snowmobile ran him over?
No.
You think while he was running, he was like,
I'll buy that.
But he usually does it for good cause. He like does it to help.
He was pretty badly hurt. Sorry,
he was.
I take it all back.
It's weird that he collects like buses and random
does he
vehicles.
Really?
Yeah, he has a whole.
And does he refurbish them?
Yeah, he has a whole like thing in Vegas where he just has this giant garage that's filled with all random kinds of things.
I mean. That does sound like something he would do.
He also seems like he's a really good guy.
I hate to say it, but like, I don't want to judge how people use their money. But like, if you've got a lot of money and it's going towards renovating buses to put in like giant like I don't know warehouses that you own.
Well, he retrofits them and does it like gives them away. Like,
does he?
Yeah, that's okay. What the whole show is about.
Okay, well that seems all right then. It's just. It's an odd hobby. It's a rich man's hobby, I guess I'd say.
Yeah. It's an odd hobby. I will agree with that.
But anyway, we're in a bit of a renter hole there.
Yeah. It seems like y'all are excited. I'm not yet, but I'll allow that it might happen. That's where I was on Fast and Furious, too, by the way.
Yep. We're going to talk about Fast and Furious. Fast 10, your seatbelts.
Yes.
So we're not supposed to call it Fast X, apparently.
Is that what it was?
Wasn't that the rule? Didn't somebody say that?
Oh, maybe. I have no idea.
I thought you weren't supposed to call it Fast X.
Ever since...
you were the one who told us that.
Mm-hmm. Ever since Grant Morrison said the Weapon X program was actually Weapon 10 program, everything's been broken.
It's all gone to hell.
I'm sorry, Morrison, I love you, but you never should have done that.
Nope. The other teaser we saw is Five Nights at Freddy's.
This is a pretty simple teaser, but as far as I know... It does encompass the basics of at least the first game, which is to say someone ends up as the new security guard at a, you know, Freddy's, the creepy Chuck E. Cheese type place, and, you know, the animatronics come to life and, I guess, try and murder you, something.
Yeah.
We need to bring a 10-year-old kid on who will then spill the lore for us for about 3 hours.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I will say, as trailers go, though, it wasn't bad. It got my attention. Stars the guy from the Hunger Games.
Had a creepy look, right? Is it the guy who played Randy Pita? Pita?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What I liked is that they did, although obviously a lot of it is set in the actual, like, pizza parlor place, there was some weird-looking stuff, some shots I was like, oh, what's going on there? That of, like, people in the forest and... What looked like some kind of, I don't know, almost like, they were either, like, looking around or, like, they almost like looked cultish, though.
Well, it's curious. The director of this is the director, she also did some of the podcast, the Left Right Game. Did you ever listen to any of
that? Yeah, I listened to all of Left Right Game. I alternately thought it was ingenious and really good, and then I kind of hated it by the end.
a little bit, but...
But like, there's a lot of good stuff in there, and the basic premise was fantastic.
Yeah,
it is also an urban legend thing. Yep. So
if she can bring some of that same kind of vibe to Five Nights at Freddy's, that I don't know, trailer looked fun.
Yeah, you said she was the director of that show.
She directed the Left Right Game, but she's also directing this.
I would, at the very least, by the way, suggest that people listen to like the first 2-3 episodes of Left Right Game. To me, those were the best episodes. Was the getting rolling.
Yeah.
But it kind of amounts to an urban legend about a kind of a road trip where if you do follow these rules long enough, just kind of like some of those spooky weird elevator games, you will end up in a place that is somehow kind of off the map in the world and like in some sort of slightly otherworldly version of our world and weird things start to happen.
Yep.
But it's also got the vibe of a road trip where they've packed food and weapons even if they need it and, you know, all the, you know, stoves and things like that. And some interesting things happen.
Talk to the hitchhiker.
The hitchhiker thing was actually a super cool idea.
Stop for the hitchhiker, but you can't talk to them.
You can't talk to them. Yeah, no matter what, like, there's certain rules you follow, and sometimes you don't even know quite why you're doing it and exactly how bad it would go if you didn't follow the rules. But, like, one thing is, like, once you've gone a certain ways, you'll see something and you'll know you're on the right trail, like a landmark or something. And when you do, one of the first things you do is you're going to see a hitchhiker. He's going to get in. He's going to say a few things that he says every time. But then he'll start asking questions like he knows about you. And you cannot, like, look at him and you can't answer him.
Yep.
And if you do, something very clearly bad will happen. And it's always clearly very hard not to because he's going to ask weirdly specific personal knowledge and stuff. And those scenes are really cool.
Yeah.
I think we hear at least two or three of them in the thing, which is, you know, done in the form of kind of like that, kind of a found footage-y sort of vibe to it. Anyway, left-right game is good-ish.
I blacked out there.
Randy, you should try it, honestly. I believe, you know, I know you like Limetown and a few others.
Yeah, yeah.
This falls squarely within that, and it's got a finite ending. So unlike, say, Black Tapes, another spooky podcast, but that also went on too long.
It did. I love Black Tapes. I'm so mad they didn't end it better.
Nick, am I correct? This was essentially just a one-season thing, but it was like 12 episodes, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't have any Five Nights at Freddy love, but I'm not the target audience.
I think, just in case people haven't heard of it, this was based on the video game series that is hugely popular, I would say, with like preteens and early teens.
Yep.
It's like a kid's first scary video game.
Yeah. Well, I thought the trailer looked pretty scary for like a kid.
It's got to be PG-13, right?
I mean, I would assume so.
I don't know.
But it felt kind of like in the vein of like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah.
Right.
It gave off a vibe that was a little bit more quality than I expected. It didn't look like, oh, cheap video game tie-in.
Yeah.
Which would make sense because, A, I've heard that there is good, creepy lore to the game.
It looks better than the Nicolas Cage Willy's Wonderland. Feels like a knockoff of Five Nights at Freddy's.
Like it would almost have to be.
Yep.
That was an awful movie.
But, yeah, if they, you know, there's, as long as they kind of, like, take it seriously, and that game, by the way, has sold, and I know there's sequels and stuff, too, like, a bazillion copies.
Yeah.
I remember, like, 5-6 years ago, every parent that I knew who had a kid who was anywhere between, like, 8 and 15 was like, is it okay if I show them this? I'm kind of worried that this game might be too scary for them. And almost everybody said, it is. But they're going to play it anyway, so just let them play it.
He plays Grand Theft Auto, but I didn't know.
It seems like they managed to overall walk the line, as suggested by the fact that the graphic novels that they've done of it are put out by Scholastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
So clearly it is not so egregious that or anything like that. But I think like the perhaps very religious parents or people who just don't get kind of horror as a genre were just like, my kid shouldn't be scared to go to sleep at night from a video game, right?
I don't think kids are getting torn limb from limb or anything.
Kids have to learn at some point how to be terrified.
Right.
It's true.
How to guerrilla warfare your way past Chuck E. Cheese.
That's exactly right. It's a real life skill.
Yeah, it is. we should mention Ray Stevenson. He's going to play the bad guy, one of the bad guys in Ahsoka.
Yeah.
He plays the Punisher in Punisher Warzone. He has died at age 58, which is fairly young.
Yeah.
Especially for a guy who was in pretty good shape.
It was very sudden.
Macabre, but do we know what he died of?
We don't know.
But okay. He played the governor in RRR. He's played like the bad guy in that. He was great in that.
He was also in Rome.
Rome. Yep.
Yep.
As Titus Pullo.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff in the sort of the geek-friendly, geek-adjacent.
The thing that I am most likely to see, I would say, in the next few weeks, and I can do this little tribute to him, I still need to see RRR. Many people have told me it's interesting good and crazy, and Randy, you gave it a pretty good pitch.
I really enjoyed it.
But I also know it's like 3 hours long or something like that.
I would watch it in chunks. I would watch it in three. It breaks up discreetly enough. You could watch it in 3 1-hour chunks as basically a miniseries.
Or just get on a plane and watch it that way.
Or get on a plane where you don't have anything else to do and just watch all of it. That is another way you can go.
Did one of us do that?
That's what I did, yes.
Oh, okay.
That is how I watched it. I downloaded it on my iPad.
Chunk one,
and I watched
chunk
all
two,
of it.
Chunk three. All in a row.
But I also think, to some extent, I missed something, because as much as I enjoyed it, I would have liked to have seen it on a big screen.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
So
you took it all in one mega chunk.
I did. Yes. All right, let's talk. We have a little bit of comic news to mention. Al Ewing, who we mentioned doing Fury, Al Ewing's biggest thing was Immortal Hulk.
Yep.
He is now doing Immortal Thor. The Thor book that Donny Cates was doing sort of ran, I think he handed it over basically to the
artist?
One of the co-writers?
Yep.
No, Hulk handed over to the artist.
Okay.
And it's sort of finishing up its run. And so Al Ewing is relaunching as Immortal Thor. Now, I don't know what exactly that means. If it's like...
It actually makes more sense with Thor, who is the literal god, than it did with Hulk, where what they did... I actually don't remember quite how they intended to use the name, but it had all these horrific transformations and stuff.
Right. Well, he was immortal in that he could not die because he kept going to hell and coming back.
If Al Ewing's tracker is to be believed, this will be Thor through the ages.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, yeah, he talks about it in the Norse myths. The gods know him as Asgard's king, but apparently he has had other names and other gods and that kind of thing. Buried secrets are waiting to be unearthed. Ancient gods, elder gods, if you will, are coming to bring trial and sorrow to Earth, Asgard, and Thor, and he's going to be his absolute highest self to face them.
Well, you know, essentially, after Immortal Hulk, you know, he's a writer that people should probably try out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That run became very hot very quickly, and then we had a lot of people in the months and years to come afterwards trying to catch up on it, looking for issues that had sold out, trying to find trade paperbacks when sometimes they would slip out of print for a little while.
Yep.
So you probably want to at least check this one on the ground floor and see what he's got going on.
Yep.
And Randy, we were talking about, I think you and I both wanted to go back and check out his recent Guardians of the Galaxy run.
Yeah, which is all on trade now.
Which got off to a good start. I just lost track of it.
Same.
So I kind of like to see where that went, because I'm in a Guardians mood because the movie was good.
And then the other thing is Rom Space Knight, the 80s hit. They just announced they're going to do they're going to do omnibuses and a reprint of number one, like a facsimile reprint.
This was based on a toy,
mm-hmm.
and the toy kind of like came and went. It was like around for like a year, and then nobody ever saw it again. But like kind of sci-fi alien, like warrior in an armored suit, kind of Iron Man like but from another world, fighting. At the time, the toy didn't actually, I think, even specify who they were. They built up all the lore in the comics. And this is one of those weird things where, even though it's based on a toy, almost everybody I know who read ROM in the 80s remembers it fondly.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, oh yeah, I remember when the Wraiths were in X-Men, or the actual ROM comics by Bill Mantlo, mm-hmm. a.k.a. creator of Rocket Raccoon. You know, he did a good job with it. He also did Micronauts. He knew how to treat toy properties seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it's actually, there was never even any question of like, He kind of lucked out because ROM, unlike, say, G.I. Joe or Transformers, did not have to constantly introduce new toys.
Right.
The toy line flopped. So all it had to do was be about this guy who was uncovering, sort of like the Skrulls, their secret conspiracy on Earth and all that.
He was a Space Knight from Galador.
Yeah.
Space Knight from Galador, yeah. And this book had that darkness that... This is why I'm glad it's getting reprinted. I wish it was not the omnibus format. I would rather have, like, the epic line Gourmet, stuff that are a little bit more affordable if you just want to dabble.
Right.
Because this is probably going to be some $75, $100 omnibus.
It's probably $100. There's going to be, I would guess, three of them. Because it's 75, they ran 75 issues and four annuals, plus a few crossovers.
But it's good material. As a kid, I kind of glommed onto it. I only bought random comics, but I probably had, like, 10 or 12 ROM comics. And honestly, as I've revisited them over the years, yeah, obviously there's some 80s throwback stuff that's a little dated, but the stories, by and large, hold up. Any random one that I remember, like one with... Do you know who the Metal Master is from the Hulk?
Yep.
There was one with the Metal Master. It was good. Mm-hmm. There's one where the Wraiths come down and take a kid in Scotland. Like, they're holding, like, a village under, like, their wrath, and the villagers, like... once every season sacrifice like a child to the Wraiths because they're like alien dark sorcerers, right? And they're creepy looking too. They also, when they showed up in X-Men, they did a rethink of happened in actual ROM. You know the one I'm talking about, Randy, the ones where the Wraiths went from being more humanoid to those big ol' red creatures that look like something from The Thing.
Yeah, was that a Sub-Buscema design? Because I know he did a lot of the
It actually might have been, and not my favorite artist, but I think with certain inkers and with good stories he could do good stuff. But yeah, this is quite the rare opportunity to check out a good 80s cult book.
Did ROM kill all the child killer Wraiths?
He shredded them.
Good.
Normally he had his neutralizer weapon. The neutralizer...
He sent them to limbo?
Sent them to limbo, very much like the Phantom Zone thing. It was a kind of an easy way to not kill.
On that one he decided...
But on that one, the Wraiths got away with the kid. Now, it was a two-part story, and I guess he later did rescue the kid. But as a kid, I didn't know that. I just know the issue ended with them having gotten away with the kid. But while they were doing it, he freaked out, and he just starts splattering them. And, like, imagine if, like, Iron Man used all his strength and just brought it down on a human's head. The Wraiths were kind of, like, doughy-looking weird things at the time. So, you know, it wasn't gory in that sense. But he was also, like, he put, like, the neutralizer on, like, heavy laser, and it was just going right through him, like butter. Good times. But it will show you, Bill Mantlo had this dark streak in all his books.
Yeah.
When he wrote The Hulk and all of that stuff. it always had this kind of dark edge to it. I know I've shown you the scene where in Micronauts, one of the rebel leaders, like the sort of the 1% of the it's a very Star Wars kind of story. The 1% people come to him and they're like, "Oh, Baron Karza," they're Vader type. He's like, "He offered us eternal life." He's like, "What do you offer us?" And because you know they've got lots of money, they're powerful people. And Force Commander, one of the heads of the rebellion, just blows them all away instantly. And he's like, "A quick death, parasites." Sometimes Bill Mantlo was weirdly dark. Yeah. And that's kind of what's fun about it. Like, you're reading something, you're like, oh, this comic was a little unhinged at times.
But kind of on point, too.
Yes, but kind of on point. He seemed to, he prophesied the future.
Now, Analyzer, Neutralizer, and he had one more.
Translator?
It was a translator, yeah. I was trying to think if he had a gun that, like, just straight up blasted, but it was probably that was shredding them, but they were actually being sent to the neutral zone, which didn't, you know, you were a kid, you didn't know that.
Right. But yeah, they wanted him to, the toy came with a few different little tools and like his, it was like a tricorder kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was like tricorder, phaser, and something else. They just called them different things. But they lit up and they made other sounds and things like that. I didn't have it, by the way. Nobody I know, I've never met anyone who actually had ROM.
I
probably have brushed shoulders at a convention, but
I didn't have one, but I know I knew a kid who had it because I remember specifically having one in my hands. It was a big bulky, it was not a good toy.
Right, what I remember
bulky, barely moving toy.
Right, like the arms moved, but the legs didn't, and you're just like, you kind of shuffle it along.
Yeah.
Transformers technology, kind
of. But even they had a little bit more movement.
Yeah.
And you could enjoy the transformation process, which did have a lot of movement.
Nick, try to think of an oversized GoBot. That's what ROM was. That's,
yeah.
He had four points of articulation.
I had lots of GoBots.
GoBots were not cool. GoBots were bad toys.
Objectively bad.
Objectively bad toys.
We took a poll, and people agreed. Yes. GoBots were bad.
GoBots were bad.
Except for that one.
Which one?
I don't know. The helicopter? Who was the helicopter?
I don't remember. I just remember Psykill.
Helicopter. I'm going to say that's who he was.
Yes.
I mean, you're probably not far off. their names were pretty.
But it might have been like Protector.
Anyway.
This is a good opportunity on ROM.
We were talking about this, Dave, that it'd be kind of cool if they could bring ROM back in the modern Marvel Universe, but they won't do that unless they somehow get all the rights from Hasbro, which I don't see them doing.
Right. The only possibility, and I know this is obviously a remote thing, but is like, if this goes off kind of well, they might put more oomph into trying to get ROM back. And I feel like ROM would fit in great right now if they wanted to, both as potentially, like, he could be a good member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. He could fit in any cosmic storyline, but also he would fit right in like a Secret Invasion storyline, because the Wraiths and the Skrulls, they at least, I think, touched on their similarity as shape-changing infiltrators before, but since they've been kind of redeeming the Skrulls in the comics, I feel like the Wraiths are guys that you can say are pretty purely evil because they are like sort of like black magic cultists. They use dark magic. They were scary in the X-Men. I don't know if you remember this, Randy, but they would kind of do a little thing, a little bit like the aliens did, where their like little tendril, their tongue tendril would go out, and it would just go right into people's brains.
And that was it. You were done.
You were done
forever.
It was like what do you call it in D&D? It was like a
mind flayer.
A mind flayer. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very disturbing.
It was quite disturbing. People like didn't they kind of like wilt and turn to ash?
Yep.
When
yep.
that happened, it yep. was gross.
Yeah, they didn't just take your shape. They disintegrate you first.
Yep. I think I actually Randy and I talked off mic about this the other day about how some cool stuff you could do with like a little shadow war going on with Wraiths and Skrulls and stuff like that, subverting some of the expectations. But it would all have to start with just like, is this going to do all right? So you know, probably what if people are interested, if someone really wants to, let us know on these early on. They're going to be pricey.
Yep. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Fast 10 and a show and a video game. So, we're going to start with our spoiler review of Fast 10. If you don't want to be spoiled on Fast and Furious Fast 10... first of all, it's kind of hard to spoil. It's just kind of a dumb action
More
movie.
More the same. Or if you just think these are the dumbest movies that have ever existed and you will lose respect for us if you hear us say we kind of liked it, Move on quickly.
Too late, Dave. Now they know.
They know the secret is after the spoilers begin now. Yes. After the off outing that was what Fast Nine, whatever they called it.
And I think you guys are too hard on Nine. Nine is perfectly in line with everything else.
This is Nick and I trying to like get our heads into that headspace.
I mean, I'm gonna rewatch.
Nick, how much of it is the space thing? Is there dumb car floating in space?
I mean, that was a part of it.
It's a problem.
All of it felt a little just kind of
stitched together, or
it was just kind of.
I mean, they all kind of do stitch together simple plots where they're chasing around a MacGuffin, and it's excuses for them driving fast cars, and you know, occasional gunfights, occasional butt cheeks of women.
They're just
that's just what they do.
I feel like it had any like passion, and I know that sounds dumb because this is a big dumb action film. But I grew up on big dumb action films.
Certainly, there are times in any action franchise when you're like they're kind of spinning their wheels. It doesn't feel like this one needed to exist or
Nine
whatever.
Literally spun their wheels.
I disagree. I thought Jonas John Cena's character was a fun addition. I thought seeing Dom's racing background was kind of cool. I like the dumb space stuff. I like seeing the guys back from Fast 3, which, Nick, you like Fast 3 more than I do. And yeah.
Oh, that is Bow Wow and,
sure, I don't know their names. Hick guy and his buddy and other guy.
What was the climactic chase and or fight car fight sequence in that?
Well, there were two. There was the magnet thing. They had taken John Cena's magnet technology and were using it against him.
I think I thought that was kind of lame.
It was pretty bad. I got to admit, they were in love with that magnet idea.
Yes.
And they went way too far with it. I was like, these are supposed to be... I want car chases. I don't want magnet.
Now, that said, I'm going to say that the action sequence in Rome in this one with the bomb is also ridiculous.
It is.
But I'm trying to think, Nick, why do I like that sequence better than, say, the magnet sequence? They're both dumb.
They're both dumb.
I don't know.
Is it just better directed? Is a magnet a little too sci-fi somehow, but a rolling giant kind of... Like if there's a big spherical mine... Or bomb that's clearly very sturdy because it bounces all over Rome. Almost destroying the Vatican. But, like, just, it must roll a mile to get there.
I think that...
And it
think,
smashes through buildings and cars.
I
and
think it's the setup. Because
that's goofy, too.
Here's the thing. John Cena, who, he goes through his whole villain-to-hero arc in one movie.
Yes.
He's great in this one.
Yeah.
Like, it's not John
he's
Cena.
Pretty good.
John Cena's great in this one. You guys both liked him in this one.
Yeah. No, I like John Cena fine as, like, a villain-turned-good guy in, like, 30 minutes.
Cypher's in both of them?
Cypher is utilized amazingly here.
It is like, everything was better.
I honestly
don't actually remember what Cypher did in the previous one.
She became the bad guy midway through.
Wasn't she? She was already the bad guy.
I mean,
no,
she was in a cage most
of Nine.
Oh. Yeah, I think I think that's not like an energetic use of her. Here she was a very active...
In Fast 10, she got her ass beat down by Michelle Rodriguez, which is a lot of fun.
Also,
let's real quick...
The new characters they introduced in this one were really good.
So let's just rewind, as bare bones as the plot is,
yes.
What gets it rolling in this?
So the reveal is that Jason Momoa is the son of the drug lord from Fast 5.
Right, the best, arguably the best one, if not one of the best.
No arguments to be made. If someone argues differently, they're wrong. Fast 5 is the best Fast Furious movie.
Fast 7 is a close
You know what's weird? I would also accept if somebody was like, I liked it before it got that out there, and I just liked the first one best. I think that's also an acceptable answer.
No, that's incorrect.
Anyway, the...
Latin Jack Ryan was the villain. That was great.
Yes.
So the drug dealer had a son. They opened by showing the highlight reel of the Fast 5 finale chase, which is one of the great chases in the whole movie.
It is.
So it's really pretty clever to start with that. But they insert these little scenes where Jason Momoa was, like, running around... trying to, you know, he was in one of those cars with the minigun that was blazing at the shooting at the heroes.
Trying to catch
we just
Dom.
Never we just didn't see it. We didn't see who he was. We didn't know who he was.
We never saw the driver.
But they very cleverly kind of like were like, he could have been there. and like made a good case visually. This is what they're pretty good at editing, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, I guess he was out there on the bridge during the big battle at the end when his dad got wrecked.
Yep.
And he vowed revenge.
Yes.
And his father, I think, had imprinted on him that killing is too easy.
Yeah,
you have to torment them. Yeah, yeah, you make him suffer. And so that is what he does. And in the tradition of, like, a comic book villain, he's out to, like, hurt the people you love, destroy the things you care about. So this is a pretty good thing for a villain because it means that he doesn't, even though he's, like, in charge, almost any scene he walks into, he's holding more cards than people know he does. He's got more backup or technology, or he's blackmailing somebody. And let's just quick say, Jason Momoa is a big scene stealer as
yes,
the flamboyant, could be mildly homophobic, but didn't quite feel that way somehow.
No, I feel like it was actually all done with love.
Randy, the way you described it when we were talking about it afterwards, and you said that, like, its juxtaposition against these very macho movies felt almost like a subversion of expectations.
Yes.
And the fact that this guy was always one step ahead...
And then also, honestly, he's a bad guy, and he's a murderer. He is like their Joker, but he's so charismatic that you can't help but like him.
Yeah, well, you can also tell that he's having
a time of his life. Yeah,
so, I mean, there's a portion where, much like the Joker in Batman 89, he sits there talking to the corpses of two people he's killed.
Yep.
And he's just chatting it up, having the time of his life.
Actually having a conversation.
Always wearing some goofy, kind of, like, overly stylized, slightly fashionable, blousy look. Weird, like, stuff
hair
in his hair.
Up.
Yeah, always, like, his hair in, like, a big bun or whatever. And very fun villain.
Yeah.
And not quite what I expected him to be. So he kind of stole all the scenes he was in.
And they also bring in Brie Larson.
Yep.
As Little Miss Nobody, a.k.a. Nobody's Daughter. And she steals most of the scenes she's in.
I liked her.
Like, she's really good. And they bring who's the guy who plays Reacher? What's his name? You remember his name?
Oh, no.
The guy who plays Reacher and played Hawk in Titans, who's a very charismatic guy. He is brought in as the new head of the agency.
Yeah.
Right, Nobody's, like, secret black ops agency that Dom and the crew have worked for.
And he's got kind of, his motivations are like, oh, is he with them? Oh, is he hunting them? We don't know throughout, so he gets
the... No, he's definitely he's on the outs of the most of the movie. He is, like, the bad, he is...
Right, but they definitely play with redemption stuff.
Yes, yes.
And the big redemption thing we should say, here's the biggest spoiler is that Cypher, who killed... That is to say, Charlize Theron's evil character. She's the hacker, like master crime master who hacked all the cars in the one and made them into zombie cars.
Right.
By the way, some people are listening to this and they're like, "What are they doing? What are they talking about?"
But she killed Dom's baby mama.
She killed Dom's baby mama.
She didn't. She gave the order. And
did she give the
order? No, she gave
Randy,
the
this
order.
This is dangerously close to we were just following order.
She gave the
Nazi
order,
stuff.
And the tall wildling
from
shot
Game
her.
Of Thrones?
Yes, because she was holding the baby.
But she kind of gave the
and
order,
then,
though.
Oh, she 100% gave, like, she was standing there while he did it.
And so she pays her penance, which is to say she has a knockdown, drag-out fight with Michelle Rodriguez. Really fun and... brutal, but in that comic book way that all of their movies are brutal, where you can get thrown through a wall and pick yourself up, you know?
Yeah, it's akin to, like, Vin Diesel and The Rock fighting in Fast 5.
But it is brutal and fun. I like that Michelle Rodriguez got to kind of get that moment.
She's had a kind of good couple of months with her
D&D
kicking ass there.
Absolutely.
And then her...
Absolutely.
The thing is, this movie is just fun.
We were laughing in the good way.
Yeah.
The that's so outrageous, it's hilarious way, not the oh my god, what are we watching way.
Yep. No, I was Nick and I were laughing throughout the whole thing.
I was in on it from like scene one.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just silliness, but there was good action. I thought the set pieces were just fun.
Yep. There's some of the dialogue, it's like when Vin Diesel does like start talking about family, or like talks to his son and he's very sincere about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is hokey as hell.
Yeah.
Like, and some of that stuff I was a little cringy just as far as like, kind of how repetitive it is from the series, but like it is.
That's baked into it.
It almost spoof proof because they are the stuff that's in the spoof is they take seriously.
Yep.
But it does give it that sense of heart. Yeah. Right? Yeah. The movies all have heart.
We haven't even talked about the whole John Cena and his nephew growing cusp. They definitely brought in John Cena's character and like. Yeah, bring some of that Peacemaker energy, because they made him a little dorkier.
Yeah, they went ahead and let him kind of John Cena out the character. Yeah. He went from villain to John Cena.
Yeah, and it's a blast.
And all their subplot stuff is very fun. There's a really good action sequence that has Cena and, is it Brie Larson there?
Yeah, I think so.
When they're rescuing the kid for the first time and all those special ops dudes are busting in
the door. No, it's not Brie Larson, it's Jordana Brewster.
Jordana Brewster, that's right,
His mom.
Bunch of good action fight stuff in there.
Yeah.
But John Cena's super fun. What does he have? He's got a ridiculous car.
Yes.
Yep.
For the most part, for half the movie, he's like driving in this beater that's just like a trash.
Yep.
I don't know. I forget what it is.
It's not
70s.
A trash, it's a Mustang.
Okay.
Yes, sure.
It's a Mustang. It's like a 90s era Mustang that.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, that looked. It was like one of the bad Mustangs.
Aesthetically, very ugly.
Yeah.
But then later on, he's got a car that has, I don't know, rocket tubes and stuff on it. There's no way to describe it. He pogos with it later on in the movie.
He does.
During the climactic sequence. When he sacrifices his life, seemingly.
Nobody dies in Fast and Furious. That's been confirmed in this movie.
Yep. And, there's a return.
A couple big returns.
I guess maybe we don't need to say who they were.
Yeah.
And the return of a vehicle, I'm going to say. And that's cool to see that again.
It's a big cliffhanger. Like, the whole thing ends on a cliffhanger.
Right.
Yep.
Even though it's like, what, 2.5 hours long? 2 hours, 15 minutes, something like that. 2:15. And, like, a lot happens. There is a big cast in this, and a lot happens.
Yep.
But even then, it's not really exactly resolved when it ends. But I was very satisfied.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's one of the more fun movies I've watched this year because it's one of those, like, if you're laughing and having a good time at the theater, honestly, I don't care too much if it's stupid.
Yeah. And it is stupid. Like, it's so dumb.
Yep.
But if
you ask me, like, what action franchise would I like to live in, assuming you would obey the physics of that franchise, like in Star Wars even, you've got a good chance of getting killed. There's a lot of ones that have really dangerous stuff in it. And yes, you're probably going to get beat up in this one, but you're probably not going to die.
You can't die.
And you're probably going to do some way cool shit, and then you're going to go and drink a Corona with the family.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned who's the matriarch of
Rita Moreno.
Rita Moreno.
What is she doing here?
Was this her first one?
Yes. This is the first time we've seen her. She's in it for like 10 minutes for no reason.
What, Dom's mom?
Dom's
grandmother.
Grandmother.
And kind of a, she's like kind of presiding over their Sunday dinner.
It makes no sense why she's here.
Vin Diesel knows how to get, like, he's Helen Mirren, Judy Dench.
Helen Mirren's been in like four of these now.
Was there an occasion that she was there for? There must have been something.
Wait, Judy Dench wasn't in these.
No, but I mean, I'm just talking about Vin Diesel.
Yes, he worked with her on
Riddick.
Yeah.
He
was there an occasion
people?
For Rita Moreno's character to be there?
Nah, just...
Having someone's grandmother at a family gathering is not weird.
No.
But she was there. She got to kind of... It's almost
give
like...
Give the family speech.
She gave the family speech. And you know what this is? It's almost like movies in the bigger movie star era, like in the 60s and 70s, when you'd be like, oh, they got Raquel Welch, oh, they got Steve McQueen or whatever, and they come on and there's kind of a little play in themselves. They're bringing their own personal star power, where you're like, everybody in the audience is like, oh, look, it's Rita Moreno, she's famous. But she also got to be, she got a sweet scene and she got to be the matriarch and look kind of like matriarchal glamour look.
What were Roman and Tej and female hacker whose name I've forgotten?
What were they doing?
What were they up to in this movie?
They were the ones who got the original Rome job, and then they got separated out.
It was a setup.
They got separated out. What they were doing in the middle of it?
Yeah.
You know what I think?
They were on the run.
Oh, they ran into another guest star, which was hilarious.
Oh, God.
Can you hint it? Because I don't know.
I mean, we can just say it.
I don't even want to say it.
I mean, come on.
All right, fair. It's Pete Davidson.
Oh, right. That was a ridiculous scene.
I mean, but it was so good.
Didn't they? Who did they have who helped them out in the previous movie? Just randomly walked through. It was like a chick from hip hop.
Cardi B.
Wasn't it Cardi B and Shaw?
No, that was Fast 9. Because I just rewatched it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cardi B and her all-female assault team.
They just kind of bust them out of a situation, and it's clear that there's some past history.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is the genius, if you do buy into the basic dumb fun logic of these movies. Are there any characters among the ensemble, I'm talking villains or heroes, you don't like?
No. I like all of them.
That's the thing. I like all of them. That's a pretty good thing.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of a little swaggery, but also heartfelt when they need to be. Roman and who else have Tej, a kind of? They have a little moment in this, but they also bust each other's balls constantly.
I wish Han had done a little bit more.
Han is in this. Jason Statham is in it. It's a fucking pack movie.
Yes.
Helen Mirren shows up.
Yeah. They go ahead and give to some degree they were setting up, although you don't realize it, the next movie.
Yeah.
And I kind of didn't realize they were going to leave it on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But again, weirdly, I didn't feel dissatisfied.
So. No, I was pretty happy with this. And although I think you guys are being too harsh on Fast 9, I do think Fast 10 is better. Like, notably better.
I mean, I agree.
I'll allow for it. I'm sure I'm going to see it again at some point.
I did learn that, I guess, Reacher Man was a last-minute substitution. I guess Keanu Reeves was supposed to be that part.
Oh, man, that would have been amazing.
I feel like Keanu Reeves might be in a different part later on.
Okay. Man, Keanu Reeves playing his sort of like a version of his Point Break character would have made total sense.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But I really like the guy who plays...
Alan Richardson, something like that?
Yeah, Alan Richardson. That's... He's really good. He's charismatic. He's kind of an asshole. Yeah.
I feel like they have hired every muscle man in Hollywood, everybody who is simply legit, physically imposing.
But I will also say, legit actor a little bit.
Sure.
He can turn it on.
He was good.
I don't know. Dumb movie, fun.
That was
I can't
a lot
wait
of fun.
For the next one.
Yeah.
I'm also hopeful that a certain sequel gets a sequel.
Hobbs and Shaw 2. If nothing else, I hope they resolve the cliffhanger from Hobbs and Shaw. I want to know who that voice was.
Well, I feel like that's going to be Keanu Reeves. And they're going to tie it all in.
That would make sense.
I can see that. There is both the unnamed villain from Hobbs and Shaw, but isn't there still another unnamed villain, too? Like the person behind stuff in events in Fast 9 or something?
No,
like that?
I don't think so.
I thought there was still somebody we didn't know.
Oh, I don't
know. Maybe not.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, you just watched Fast 9.
I don't remember there being an unnamed villain.
Okay.
What's his name? Jason Momoa. He was pure revenge. He wasn't working for anybody.
No, he's pure revenge.
Okay.
Well, at the moment. We don't know. He might be a tool
It might have turned out to be all a wheel within a wheel.
There were a lot of wheels within wheels
There was a lot of fire. There was driving down a dam as it was on fire.
I'm just waiting for one of them to drive a unicycle across.
They used a crane, kind of like a pinball machine to spin something around. I felt like in the style of a video game, that if you were playing Dom in a video game and you're racing around the city and you're there like, you've got to like knock this truck off the road by any means necessary, that little bit things would start glowing, like the crane would glow.
He has the Cyclops power.
Yeah.
Yes. The way Cyclops can automatically target stuff and perform trigonometry in his head.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel can do that with a car. So the crane would glow. You would just drive near enough to it and hit the right button.
Is Vin Diesel the Cyclops of the Fast and the Furious universe?
He might be.
He's the one that keeps them together. He has that ability.
But unlike Cyclops, he's like pretty beloved. It's almost like if you took Wolverine and Cyclops and put them together.
Yeah.
Okay.
As ridiculous as anything they've ever done does occur in this movie.
Yes.
topped only by, I guess, the space thing of the
movie. Yeah, the space thing may have been the most ridiculous thing they did. And I think they only did that because he promised it in an interview and he felt like he had to deliver on it. That
Hobbs
and Shaw
introduced like cybernetic enhanced individuals.
Yeah.
Black Superman, right?
Black Superman. Zelda.
Yeah. They went a little far in Hobbs and Shaw too, but I loved that too.
However, I really want more Jason Statham, so I would love
we'll probably get a lot more of him in the next season. Next, him and Han working together.
It's so funny how they redeem their villains.
Yeah.
How many people did he seemingly kill at that hospital when he first shows up?
Lots of people.
Tons.
Which, by the way, is a spectacular opening sequence.
Yes, it is.
They were all bad, right? Or were they?
No, there were just hospital people, just hospital like security guards and stuff.
SWAT guys.
I think there were even maybe dead nurses.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's how quickly. I don't know if it went that.
Go watch that opening again. Yeah, I bet they did.
Brutal. I have asked my wife is watching all of these movies for the first time.
Yeah. Maybe I should go ahead and do this too, Nick, so I can finally see the early ones.
We've watched the first six. that was a lot of Fast and Furiouses.
So I watched, on sort of a whim, I watched this this show called Primo.
Yep.
That dropped on Amazon Prime through Freevee, which means this has the limited ads.
Okay, yeah.
A friend from Facebook friend had mentioned there's a Mike Schur show. It's not really. Mike Schur, sometimes he and Morgan Sackett, who are guys from The Good Place, were producers on it. But really, it is by a San Antonio native named Shay Serrano.
Okay.
A friend of mine recognized as like, I know. He's written some pieces and stuff, like comedic
Well,
pieces.
He's part of the Ringer podcast
Ringer
network.
Podcast network,
and
yeah,
I've listened to him. He's really smart, but he is kind of, he's a Fast and Furious guy. He's
okay, that
like
makes sense.
Super, he likes action and all that
so
stuff.
So this
really
is
cool.
This is based on his life.
Okay.
And it is it's a sitcom, and Primo is the name, is a nickname for the kid who is played by, I swear he's the Hispanic Tom Holland. He's very charming. He's very baby-faced. He is playing a 16-year-old. I forget his actual name, but they call him Primo. He's got a single mom, and she has five brothers, and they're all his crazy uncles.
Okay.
His crazy uncles include one who's like a hippie dude who doesn't have a job, one who is like a landscaper dude who is married and has a kid and basically is like always telling him he should come to work for him at the landscaping company. He's got a uncle who works at a bank who is like worships Wolf of Wall Street and wants to be a money making guy, and then he's got a uncle who is an army recruiter guy, and I forget who's the last one. The last one's basically in and out of jail guy. Mm-hmm. His name Raleigh. These are all bigger than life characters, and basically they are always full of advice for him. They have been with him his entire life. There's no dad in the picture, so he's like five dads, and the mom is the one who basically keeps them all. She's the sane one who keeps them all. Out of jail, alive, fed, mm-hmm. all this kind of thing. And it's about this sort of big family.
Is it a drama or a comedy?
It's a comedy.
Okay, and half hour or hour?
Half hour.
Got it.
I like this from the outset. The characters are very well drawn and all that kind of stuff. But what it sold me is about, I think the fourth episode, they do this thing called the Game Champ, which is a game where they incorporate a bunch of different games. So it's like Trivial Pursuit and Monopoly. And
yep.
It's kind of like when New Girl did like True American. Or, Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine both did, like, games episodes. But basically, it's this ridiculous game where people get hurt. And his mom, who is usually the rational one, is like, no, I want to play Game Champ. And so they all do this, like, big, long, extended thing. There's another one where one of the uncles, he in revenge for being stranded on the roof by the landscaper guy, he strands him on the roof during one of the hottest days in San Antonio and refuses to give him any food or water because it's all what he was what he had done to him.
That sounds pretty good.
And throughout this, there's a through line of there's this girl, Maya, who he's friends with, who he has like a crush on, and their sort of romance is very sweet and believable.
What is this on? Did you say Prime? Or?
Prime, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's called Primo. It's very funny. It's very sweet. It reminds me of like what I like about, say, Parks and Rec and Good Place and that kind of thing.
It's got some good directors on there. And I see that Melissa Fumero
from Brooklyn Nine-Nine directs some episodes.
Yeah.
It is very funny. It's a great ensemble cast.
I'll have to try this out. I really enjoyed listening to him talk about movies and music. He's big into like music scene.
The quality of the writing is really there, and the quality of the acting is really there.
Like, cool.
It's a lot of fun. I would definitely recommend it. It's only an episode. It's one season. I'm sure they'll do more, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's a very satisfying watch.
Nice.
Dave, you're going to talk about this video game Dredge you've been playing.
Yeah, what's more commercial than a game named Dredge?
Well, I think there's a commercial.
You have a video game for me?
Yes, I do, sir. By the way, we've talked about Pitch Meeting before,
we've
right?
We've absolutely talked about
Pitch Meeting. I was going to say, it's maybe time for a revisit, but some other day. Anyway, Dredge is a little indie game that, if I were to just real quick sum it up as an elevator pitch, it's a Lovecraftian fishing game.
Sure.
And that's not all it is, but essentially, the game, when you're looking at it, most of the time looks sort of like isometric, looking down on spooky little bays and rocks and things like that, and islands. that looks almost like if you had, like, Diablo, but kind of made it a little bit more kind of spooky, cartoony, and had it at sea, right? That kind of three-dimensional,
yeah,
third-person, overhead isometric perspective. But the premise is that you are a person who, you're like, your fishing boat wrecked in this weird small town. I'm going to blank on it because it's been, like, a week or so since I've played. It's
sure.
got a memorable name, but... So you wreck in this town in a little cut scene with art that looks... Randy, think of, like, a sort of macabre, like Riley Rosmo.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of Riley Rosmo combined with, like, Mike Mignola, a little more angular like that.
Okay.
But you see these, like... You meet the townsfolk, and each town that you go to on different islands has, like, a few different things you can do. But the meat of the game is... It's a how do you even describe it? It's not fishing in games like Zelda where you cast a line and then you have to like fight each individual fish and reel it in with and get better lines and all that stuff.
Right.
You can get those things, but it's really more about outfitting your boat, avoiding the scary fogs and monsters in the sea, finding out places to fish from the people there. Basically, they're like, we will work on repairing your boat, but it's going to take a while. Why don't you make some money and help us out in the meantime? And then you end up kind of going on missions for them.
Oh.
And it is spooky, but it's like, I can only describe it as cozy spooky. It's a chill game that rarely has like really high-stakes moments. I have been chased by a monster at sea. You also, when the sun sets, the fog starts to blanket the ocean, and you want to get inside before then because things will start coming up out of that time. You also have to sleep in the game, so you occasionally got to just go to a town and get some rest. Otherwise, you're like the screen will start to like show like hallucinations and stuff like that. You're also boat has like a. Limited number of like squares where you can put stuff. You actually have to manage your cargo. Where do the fish go? Sometimes you get weird monstrous fish too. They actually sell for more in places. And eventually, like weird, some people will be like, "Oh, I'm looking for the weird ones." And you meet sort of like slightly mad scientist-y people. And there's little soap operas going on, that kind of suggest gothic. Oh, my, brother that I drove off. He's gone to this other island, and I haven't seen him in years.
Dave, you described this to me, and I'm like, there's enough of it. I'm like, man, I gotta look at some screenshots and see, like, what this looks like.
It mostly
so are you
looks...
mostly on your boat?
Yes, but you will also, like, whenever you go to town, which is pretty regularly, there's an accelerated day-night cycle, so you actually... When time only goes by when you move. So if you're like out in the ocean and you're like planning something and figuring things out, time doesn't go by. But as anytime you're moving or going somewhere or fishing, it goes by. And so you want to make things more efficient. You want your boat to go faster. You want to be better protected against rocks. You want better lights on it, so at night, because inevitably you will end up riding around at night.
Okay.
You want to be able to see the rocks so you don't hit them and have to spend money on repairs and lose, like, precious time. You want to get fishing lines. And there's ones for shallows, deep-sea fishing, and a few other ones. You want to have a good variety to choose from because when you fish, there's, like, just a real quick kind of mini-game that I gather is not uncommon in certain fishing games. If you screw up the timing on it, just think very simple rhythm game kind of stuff. But if you screw up the timing, it might take you a while to catch a fish or something like that. Literally, it only takes you a few seconds, but like an hour or two could go by.
Hmm.
And so you want better fishing lines so that less time goes by. Where I'm at right now is I've explored... you start out at one island. There's at least five sort of main islands along with some secrets along the way. The vibe is so cool in this game. If you like spooky stuff, but you don't need it to always be like full-on Resident Evil or Silent Hill horrific,
mm-hmm.
you kind of like a chill spooky thing, if that has any appeal... It's a game that people should definitely try. It's a budget game, too, I think. Like, I think you can get it for, like, $30 or something like that. And it probably plays maybe... I bet you'd play it in, like, 20 hours. Maybe less than 20 hours. So, for me, that's usually a positive. I like shorter games so that I can actually win them.
Do you think I would like this game? It seems too chill for me.
It probably is.
What's the no way... What's the... space game that I didn't like. You wound up digging.
No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky. It's... So that game is very freeform. Like, you go to pick and decide what you want to do. In this, it is linear to a degree.
Okay.
You might be like, oh, okay, I've got three things I could do right now. I could go look for... I hear there's a shipwreck out in these deep waters, so I know, like, I want to leave in the morning so that I can get back before nighttime. And so that's one thing I could do. I also have a mission to get these weird deformed fish, which the game keeps a little journal for you and stuff. That's they look really cool. Some mad scientist type person wants them for his experiments, so I could go and look for those guys. And you're usually going to know roughly where they are on the map, but sometimes you don't know exactly where. Or I could go explore some other area. You know, like, you'll have a few options, but it is not super open-ended like those games.
Okay, all right.
So it is actually, you're usually pretty focused. You kind of has a... The only thing I can think of to compare it to, because it's not really like any other game, is the base building in XCOM.
Okay.
You know, where there's the sort of mini-game of figuring out the arrangements on your boat, figuring out what you want to upgrade.
Did you have to figure out, like, Tetris style, where to put all your catches?
A little bit. Yeah, you are kind of constantly doing that, and you might be like, well, I caught this swordfish. I know that it could get me, like, $100, and that would be really nice to have at the docks, but I found a part that I can use to upgrade stuff, and that's just more valuable, so the swordfish has to go out. Now, you're not, like, constantly having to sort of do that, but you do... You do get to you make kind of fun decisions about what's more important to you at the moment. You know, if you see like if there's like a demo available, Randy, and I think there might be. I feels like it'd be an easy one for a demo to exist of. I would say try the demo because it reveals itself in just the first 20 minutes or so. Now, it is a game where the deeper strategy and funner stuff of it is probably like, you know, a couple hours in before you sort of see it all. But you'll get the basic vibe real quick. Anyway, it's been buzzing for like a year or two now. I think it started out just as a game on Steam, but now it's available on consoles. You can get it on like Switch, or you can get it on a PS4 or 5. I think Xbox probably too. And I think that a lot of horror fans who if any of the stuff I've said sounded interesting, they should check it out.
All right.
Dredge.
All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week in the morning. Until that time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.